Welcome back to Random Trek. I'm Scott McNulty, your host. In this podcast, I watch a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. And today's non-random guest is Greg Noss. Greg, thanks for joining me.
May the Force be with you, Scott.
This podcast is over. Now, Greg, you are, as that joke might alert people to, a Star Wars fan. And you are also a semi-regular panelist on The Incomparable. So that's how I know about your love of Star Wars. But what is your interest in Star Trek?
I came across Star Trek in the first season of Next Generation. I had been aware of the old series, but had never watched it as anything more than something to be flipped by on a Saturday morning. But in college, I came across Next Generation, and I started watching an episode on a lark, and it kind of stuck. And so I was lucky enough to watch the first four seasons over the 4 years of college, and by the end, I was completely hooked. I was a Star Trek fan. I never returned to watch the old series, but Next Generation was my thing.
Have you gone back and watched the original series?
I have not.
Oh,
I have not. And I watched a couple of seasons of Deep Space Nine, and I watched a couple of episodes of Voyager, and I have watched one episode before today of Enterprise.
So it was kind of a diminishing returns as the series went on.
Well, that's kind of the gist of Star Trek, isn't it?
Craig, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do and how people might know you?
People might know me if they went to college with me, or if they live in my neighborhood.
Very good.
Otherwise, they probably don't. I've been active on the internet for coming up on 25 years, and I've been on the web since it started, but haven't done anything of note, basically, since I had kids.
Well, that's not true. You launched a kind of a mini controversial iPhone app that perhaps people... Because you wanted to basically replace love with scheduled text messages.
Wasn't that your goal? Well, isn't that everybody's dream?
It is true. You're living the dream. And now other people can live the dream by getting your app.
That's my I launched an app recently called Romantomatic, and it caused a minor hullabaloo in which I was vilified by all sorts of people who actually haven't tried the app. And I've gotten some very nice messages from people who have.
Although you don't know if they were just scheduled through your app or not.
So. I don't care. There are still nice messages that arrived in my inbox, which is a pleasant change from the usual.
Okay, and check out Greg's app. I think it's a great idea. The episode we watched for this podcast is a Star Trek Enterprise episode called Doctor's Orders, which is from Season 3, and this is the 16th episode of that season, which, as I mentioned before, the third season of Enterprise has a large story arc, which they kind of touch on in this episode, in that there's this temporal Cold War going on, and there's a race... an alien race called the Zindi, which are actually six different species that are all one. It's very confusing. And they're building a super weapon that attacked. As we start this episode, the Enterprise is on its way to a planet where the Zindi are building this super weapon, which they don't actually explain in this episode. But that's what they're doing, which is why they can't go around the central kind of MacGuffin of this episode, which is this kind of weird trans-dimensional rift in space.
Deconstructed space.
Exactly. So they can't go around. They have to go through.
Because space is apparently a college sophomore going through his communications class.
That's right.
That's a joke specifically for Jason Snell.
So it opens with, as I said, it shows cuts of various sets, various rooms of the Enterprise, and they're all empty.
They are in a purple region of space.
There's a purple haze outside the portholes. It is empty. You wonder what has happened to the crew. And then they cut to Porthos, who is Captain Archer's dog, running down the corridor. And then you hear footfalls, and Dr. Phlox is running after him.
I had to double-check that wasn't Neelix. This was my first in-memory exposure to the Enterprise NX,
mm-hmm.
Is it?
It is.
And it seems like the Enterprise designed by Christopher Nolan's set director for the Dark Knight series. It's like they were trying to go primitive, but instead they went gritty, like pastels weren't invented until the 24th century. Plus, for this experimental ship going out on this brand new idea of a long-term mission, should the captain be allowed to have a dog?
Well, that is another question that I've often pondered. Porthos is super cute. So I understand why he's there as I'm watching for a TV show. But it doesn't make much sense that...
From a resources perspective, I just... And from a fiction perspective, a dog is something you give a character to make him more sympathetic. And so, like, I totally see Data having a cat.
Right.
I think that fits with the Enterprise-D. I think that fits with Data's character. You don't see a lot of Scott Bakula in this episode, but he's in the Kirk mold, right?
He is. He's kind of a rugged,
Kirk does not need a dog to be humanized.
That's true. But Porthos is very cute and likes cheese. So...
And leeches.
Yeah, exactly, as we find out later, which is kind of gross. But
Scott Bakula shows up, and I thought, this is the weirdest quantum leap ever.
It's kind of, doesn't Ziggy had like a thing on his head, right? So at some point, Scott Bakula may be just a hologram from Quantum Leap. But we haven't even gotten past the, we haven't even gotten to the opening credits of this episode.
We're going to skip a lot of filler later.
There is a lot of filler in this episode. And so we find out that the last shot of the opening kind of 3 minutes is that Captain Archer is laying on his bed. And he seems unconscious, and he has like a silver disc on his forehead. And Porthos wanted to go see him because clearly Porthos has missed him. He's unconscious. We don't know why. I distinctly remember watching the Enterprise premiere episode and being very excited. I was super excited about Enterprise as a TV series.
What excited you?
Well, more Star Trek. I just love Star Trek, obviously. So I was happy that there was going to be a new adventure. I thought the idea of having it before the original series was intriguing, and I wanted to see if they could pull it off. And so I watched the first episode. I guess it was a two-parter. And once I heard the theme song...
Oh.
I knew I was
in trouble.
It
made me angry.
It is whoever decided that this show should have kind of some soft rock song to start it with.
Well, the music is, and the entire, everything about it, the music and the singing, the voice are terrible. I couldn't imagine anything less associated with Star Trek. Next Generation set the standard for me. You know, it's kind of calm, building, operatic.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick Stewart's voiceover—that is—that is how you do a Star Trek intro.
It's true, and then so that was, of course, an echo of the original series opener.
Right.
So this kind of idea that it's kind of orchestral and sweeping, and that it really should set the scope of the episode you're about to watch, because it's, you know, at the core of it, Star Trek is an adventure, right? So you want it to be sweeping and kind of set you in that mood. And I think all subsequent series, with the exception of Enterprise, have followed that mold with their intro music, and I like them all. They're all different. Not all. The only two that have voiceovers are, of course, the original series, Next Generation. The only one that has lyrics is Enterprise, and they
and
are
the lyrics.
Awful.
The lyrics are they're about faith and belief, and not Star Trek.
Yeah, it was a very strange choice. And as I was watching it with renewed eyes, because I knew I was going to talk about this, because it angers me so much, I was thinking, well, is it the song that I find so off-putting, or is it the whole kind of montage at the beginning? But I think that the montage at the beginning, where they basically go through the invention of flight and how they get to where they are now with the Enterprise going off into space, I really like that. I think
I don't think the execution is great, but I think that the idea is fine.
Yes.
The execution's middling.
Well, I like the idea that it sets it up, because the whole point of this series is that, you know, humans are new into this, and this is some kind of a new thing, and we're just kind of, you know, starting off and off into space for the first time, and this is the first deep space mission that anyone's doing. A lot of firsts are happening, so I like they build up on that history. But why they put this crappy song over it, I have no idea.
It was incredibly jarring, and just it contradicts the entire notion of what I think of as Star Wars. Star Trek.
What?
Which one was Jar Jar again? Well, the music like fits more with Touched by an Angel or something. you know, it's the schmaltz factor is schmaltz factor 10.
It is.
And Star Trek can be plenty schmaltzy, but at least the core, the foundation, the foundational idea of the series is science and exploration and adventure and mm-hmm. not
having faith in your
faith
heart.
Faith of the heart. No. You take the heart out and you examine it.
That's right. It's the science of the heart. It should have been about a cardiologist or something. But so I think we both agree.
Yes.
The theme song is awful, and it should never have been made. Awful song, and then we're back into the episode, in which Dr. Phlox is reading about dogs and dictating a letter to his friend as he walks around the Enterprise that is empty.
Siri's gotten quite a bit better.
Yes. So Siri seems to be able to sense when he's not actually talking to her as well, so... unless they don't show his thrilling editing of his letter and getting rid of when he's talking to Porthos. And I assume it's a letter, although when I was watching it, I was like, why would he be writing a letter? Couldn't he, like, do a subspace? I don't know if they have subspace communications in Enterprise, but they must because they have view screens. I don't know. I had many questions about his letter. Because that's the kind of Star Trek fan I am.
Let's explore the letter for the next 10 or 15 minutes.
All right, well, so he, but as it's basically a device for the episode, right? Because he's alone, so he can either talk to Porthos, which he does, or talk to his friend that he's writing a letter to. So,
or is he alone?
Oh, well, we'll get to that. So Dr. it gives him a reason to basically explain what's happening, because they don't explain what happens.
His friend, Dr. Exposition.
Exactly. Dear Dr. Exposition, I haven't talked to you in a while, but... So he feeds Porthos a leech, because they want to do a lot to convince the audience that Phlox is, in fact, an alien.
Well, you know, one thing I noticed, and I haven't watched... just a random Star Trek episode in a long time, but every time they mention a non-Earth species, they prefix it with the planet it's from. Mm-hmm. When he's laying on the bed, he says, like, a Pycon space moth, and later a Pyrithian bat, and I'm reading my notes, Daxon cloud viper, but he doesn't say a Earth dog.
That is true. Although he does read a story about a dog on Earth. He does mention the dog.
Scrappers.
Scrappers, that's right. Who walked 3,000 kilometers to get back to his owner. Yes, and so not having watched many Enterprise episodes, there is a scene where Phlox feeds his menagerie, but Phlox has an interest in alien zoology. Xenozoology, I suppose. So he collects... weird animals as part of his character, I guess. I don't know.
Those seem like good things to bring on board an exploratory science vessel.
There are a lot of... Once again...
They'll have to go through the decontamination chamber.
Someone will have to...
rub them down.
Exactly. T'Pol, get in there. The one theme I've noticed as I've been recording and discussing these Star Trek episodes with folks on this podcast is that I question a lot of Starfleet's underpinning rules, because they seem to allow a lot of weird things to happen. Dogs can go on their experimental ships. You know, the doctor can bring a bunch of alien life forms with him. And then the captain can just entrust his entire ship to someone who has no training in any engineering, and who, by the way, whose species, sometimes when under stress, it's healthy for them to hallucinate. Which seems like maybe not the best person to leave in charge when everyone else is in a coma.
What worried me about the Enterprise was they have to unclog the impulse manifold every 2 hours.
They do.
Somebody should really come up with a gadget that does that all by itself.
And the oddest thing is they mentioned that there are 80 people on the Enterprise, which isn't a lot of people. So there must be someone who one of the ensigns in the bunk rooms, right?
I've got an eight-hour shift of unclogging the impulse manifold every 2 hours.
It's not good. And so they explain through some dictation that they have to go through this trans-dimensional disturbance to get to this planet because they don't explain why they're going to the planet, but they need to go through this disturbance, which is rewriting space, and they have encountered this in the previous episode, actually.
It's the Infinity Gauntlet.
That Thanos is in there. The last episode, they went around it because, you know, bad things happen. People die if you go through it. But luckily, this disturbance is new, and so Phlox thinks that, thanks to his different physiology, he can stay conscious, but if he puts everyone else into a coma, they will not be harmed by the disturbance, and he can pilot the ship through. But they don't want it. It'll take, instead of 2 weeks to go around, it'll take 4 days if they go through. It would only take an hour if they went through at warp speed. But Tuck, who is the engineer, says, "I'm not. I don't want to use the warp engines, so we're not going to." And they're like, "Okay, we won't." And they don't. So everybody goes into a coma, even though all of the officers seem to be think it's a bad idea, except for Captain Archer. And so there's a nice scene with Phlox and Captain Archer where Captain Archer's like, "Well, I just want to say one thing to you." And Phlox is like, "Listen, Captain, every other officer has given me this heartfelt lecture about how they want to risk being conscious and they want to man their posts, so just give it a rest." And Archer's like, "Well, that's not what I was going to say. I was going to say that I trust you for some inexplicable reason with this great responsibility to pilot the ship through this unknown anomaly all by yourself. So give him hell." And then he gets knocked out.
I liked that scene. That was a good scene.
It was a really good scene. But I still question why he would trust Phlox so much with that. But, hey, who am I to question Captain Archer? And so he is dictating his letter, and then he says the phrase which I wrote down: "The ship is running perfectly." And just as he says that, there's a noise. And so he has to go check it out. And he doesn't find anything. But it was meant to show that he is a little uneasy. And then they start what I in my notes, call the loneliness montage, where he runs down the corridor.
That's what I call my high school years.
Me too. And so they show him running down the corridor.
I think that's what everybody listening would call their high school years.
Probably. And perhaps their current years as well. No better strategy than insulting the people who are listening to your podcast. He decides, I suppose Phlox likes to be naked, and who can blame him? So he, there is a scene in which he is naked feeding his animals.
We learn a couple of things about his society and their enthusiasm for togetherness.
It's true. He goes into the fact that he's a Denoblian or something like that, and that they enjoy being, they're very social aliens, and they like being together. They have cities that are teeming with people, not because they have to be, but because they want to be.
And there are apparently no sofas in the Enterprise, because he's sitting in a straight-backed chair watch a movie.
Well, he's in the mess hall, so what they do, apparently they have a movie night in the mess hall, where they watch hundreds of years old movies, apparently.
Yeah, The Exorcist. If you were an alien and you'd just been introduced to human culture, would your first couple of choices be The Exorcist and a Danny Kaye movie?
It seems perfectly reasonable to me. That's a great double feature. One gets the edge off the other. I'll leave you to decide which is which.
We have 3,500 years of recorded human history, from Gilgamesh all the way up to whatever's happening in the 21st century. Let's go for William Friedkin's The Exorcist.
So Phlox is alone, and he's getting a little squirrely. And then he hears another noise. And so he goes off to investigate, and that's when he quips that he should not have watched The Exorcist the other week. And then he goes into engineering, which is, you know, if you had to guess where a strange noise on a starship was coming from, I would guess engineering is my first choice. So he goes in there, and he finds, he doesn't seem too concerned, but there is some sort of leak that is venting steam in engineering and rattling some chains.
Also going, ooh.
Exactly. It was a very odd scene. I know they needed a reason for something to make noise, but having some kind of random leak happen.
Somehow the lever that caused the steam on the upper Gatling to go had gotten thrown.
That's right. And so he fixes it. And then he turns around and he's scared because T'Pol is there. And she's like, "What are you doing in engineering?" And he says, "Didn't you hear me call out and say hello?"
And she was I noted that her lipstick matched her outfit, which matched the color of the deconstructed space outside. I actually noted that, and I thought, perhaps this will become significant later.
Did it become significant later?
That's the only example of foreshadowing I've ever noticed in my entire life, so...
Well, yeah, they do some... So at the end, you find out something, which we won't ruin yet. Yes, that is foreboding. Although I didn't notice that. It's not foreboding, it's foreshadowing. I didn't notice that myself, because I am slightly colorblind. So I wouldn't have noticed that. But that is a good tidbit. So,
and I have to say, as I enjoyed watching T'Pol. Not because she's just a very attractive woman, but I thought she does a great Vulcan deadpan. I had no memory of her acting from the premiere. I've never seen her in anything else, but she seems a very effective Vulcan.
She is a very good Vulcan. There have been many actors who play Vulcans, and some have been good, some have been bad. I think T'Pol is a fine example of a Vulcan. She gives that good deadpan, kind of almost monotone, but not quite monotone voice. Mm-hmm. And she has that kind of just barely contained contempt for any
yes.
other species.
Yes.
Which I always enjoy in a Vulcan. And she is not impressed. It is clear she is not impressed with Phlox and the way he is handling things. And so she asks, why is he in engineering? Because he's not supposed to be in there. That's her job. And he's like, well, I haven't even seen you around. We've been here for a couple of days. And she said, well, I've been running diagnostics, one of my favorite things. And then the other times, I'm in my cabin reading. And so he's like, all right, well, do you want to come watch this Danny Kaye movie I'm watching with Porthos? There's popcorn. And she doesn't, sadly. But he does convince her that they should eat.
Again, the high school years.
It's true. And he's like, well, maybe we could have a meal. And she's like, all right. And so he convinces her to eat. Then he says, okay, well, thanks for having dinner with me. I want to go home, and I have to go check on the captain. And as he's going to check on the captain, he continues dictating his letter, and he tells his friend how he longs to go back to his home world and get off of this awful ship. Which, hey, he's not happy.
You may be projecting your feelings about the series onto his dialogue.
Maybe just a little bit. And so he goes to check on Captain Archer. Captain Archer is fine, but he notices something out the window. So he looks, and there's a shadow that quickly goes over, and he freaks out. It's on the wing, he screams. calling echoes of the famous William Shatner Twilight Zone episode. And so he runs off. He calls T'Pol and says, oh, I guess he goes to the bridge and tells T'Pol, I saw something on the hull. And she does some scans and she finds nothing. And he said, well, maybe there's an alien vessel out there or something. Once again, scans show nothing. He says, well, we're in reconfigured space. Maybe our sensors are screwing up. And T'Pol is like, maybe, probably not. There is another... solution to this problem.
let's go take another look at Occam's razor.
Exactly. And so she highly, strongly suggests that perhaps Phlox is losing it and maybe he should go take a nap. And he is not happy with this. And he says he doesn't need to take a rest and he is not seeing things. But he will go back to his cabin and take a nap, but he has to finish his rounds and check on Ensign Hoshi, because that's, I guess, the last person he needs to check on to make sure she's okay. So he goes to her quarters. Now, as we were discussing before, she's an ensign. She has lovely quarters. And in one of the few times, I think, that we actually see a bathroom in Star Trek, he goes into her quarters and...
Well, that's before they just transported it out of people.
Oh, that's right. Oh, wait, no. This is... I'm thinking of a different one. He goes into her quarters, and there is a giant alien insect in there.
Yes.
And he freaks out.
Bad CG.
Bad CG.
Alien insect. I saw that, and I thought, I sort of miss rubber suits.
It's true. Rubber suits, I think, you go back to the original series.
The Gorn.
Well, it just kind of looks campy, but it is an actual... It has weight, right? It's a guy, right? It's a thing.
It's this looked like a bunch of... primitives, like a sphere and a polygon, and they were all just glued together in a vaguely insectoid shape.
It doesn't stand well the test of time, but maybe, I think they're releasing the Blu-rays now, so they probably haven't redone all the special effects, but I hope at some point, perhaps, they will redo all the special effects. Probably not, given the ratings of Enterprise, but maybe, who knows? And so this
if you're going to buy the Enterprise Blu-ray, you're going to buy the Enterprise Blu-ray.
That's true.
No matter how good it is.
That is true. So this is, not knowing Enterprise, this thing that he sees is a Zindi, which he does identify. So this is the insectoid Zindi. And I do like his reaction, because generally in Star Trek, when they come across some kind of horrifying alien, it's an officer, and so they're like, well, if it's like William Shatner, I'll punch him in the face, or Picard would try to negotiate. Phlox freaks out, runs away, and locks himself in an airlock, which is what I would do if I saw something like that. So I appreciate that. And then he waits until the alien is gone, and he sneaks out and tells T'Pol that there's a Zindi on the ship. And she does not believe him, and he yells at her, gets a phaser, and says, we're searching
and
this
goes
ship.
Dog hunting.
He does. We're searching this ship from top to bottom until we can find these darn aliens. So T'Pol is like, okay. And he takes a phaser, and they go to a deck. He has a hand sensor that apparently is showing a life form of some kind. And I noticed in this scene as well that T'Pol does not have a phaser, so she's just...
And she also keeps sneaking up behind him. She appears around corners, which is the wrong thing to do with a jumpy guy with a phaser.
It is true. You should announce yourself. Say,
just wave your arms and saying, Phlox, I'm here.
Exactly. Nobody else is there. You're not going to disturb anybody.
After he's attempted to murder the dog.
Yeah, so he sees a life form coming around the bend on his sensor, and it comes around, he shoots, and it is Porthos. He nearly kills the captain's dog, but he misses, and he makes a quip about how it's a good thing he's not well-trained with a phaser, which I guess he says to put T'Pol at ease, although if I were with someone who was kind of going off the deep end, and then they told me, well, I'm not really good with weapons, and they were holding a weapon, that would not put me at ease at all. But Porthos seems to handle it well. So that's at least.
Did Porthos's nails click on the deck in other episodes? Because I thought that was really effective here, both in the opening and as they use it later. You know, something's coming. Click, 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 click.
They do.
Like insectoid legs.
Exactly. I think they do. But that is a good use of the sound effect. And really, I think overall I'm giving Enterprise a hard go of it. But I think I'm jumping to the end. But I did enjoy this episode. I thought that Phlox, John Billingsley, I think is the name of the actor, did a really good job of kind of slowly descending into madness over the course of this episode. She is hideously disfigured, and she says, "You did this to me, Doctor." And then he once again runs away. He falls out of the bathroom.
He once again runs away.
He does run away. Falls out of the bathroom, looks over, and he sees that Hoshi is, in fact, laying on her bed in her coma, as she should be. And then he starts to think, well, maybe. Maybe I'm seeing things.
There's the slightest bit of evidence that perhaps I'm seeing things.
Maybe.
Given that apparently it's built into my physiology.
That's right.
He leaves a loaded weapon in the bathroom when he runs off.
That is true.
So she's going to wake up and there'll be a gun in her bathroom.
And she'll be like, what the hell is going on? Yeah, Phlox is not the most stable character we find out through the course of this episode. He's running away from Hoshi, and he goes to check on the captain, I guess, and he runs into Archer, he's like, well, Phlox is like, why are you awake? And Captain Archer says, well, T'Pol noticed you were being a little unhinged, so she woke me up because she needed a stabilizing force, I guess. And you're screwing everything up. And that's when Phlox screams, you're not real! Which is true, because he's hallucinating Archer. And then T'Pol, he looks back, and T'Pol is standing there. Once again, she has snuck up upon him. And he's like, ah! And she's like, is everything all right, Doctor? And that's when he says, well, I haven't scanned myself. I've been so busy running around shooting dogs that I haven't had a chance to scan my own brain to see if perhaps this reconfigured space is hurting me in one way or another. So they go off to sickbay, scans himself, lo and behold, He is, in fact, hallucinating.
And this is where the episode took a turn for me. I had the kind of generic horror tropes up to this point seemed really predictable. They were just walking, you know, A, B, C, D, the straight line, all the way up to this point. And then the episode took a turn here when they kind of broke out of that mold of the, you know, haunted house horror stuff. You know, the shadow moves and the jump and something familiar turns into something horrible. And then it became like a process failure comedy.
It's true. So that we find
out. And I enjoyed that a lot more.
Yeah, I think the last act, as it were, is probably the strongest of this whole episode. This is, we find out, so Phlox finds out, oh, he is being impacted by this space. And then T'Pol says, I'm also, you know, I'm can't concentrate. I almost snapped at you. And Phlox is like, well, I was kind of being an ass, so I don't see what the problem is. And she said, you don't understand. I'm a Vulcan. We control our emotions. I should never feel annoyed. Well, I should never express my annoyance, I suppose. But I almost did, and that's not good. So something needs to happen. Oh, that's right. They have an argument about who will put the other to sleep. And T'Pol says, well, no, Doctor, you need to see us through, because at least you are capable of handling stuff. I am just forgetting how to do everything. To which the Doctor says, well, what if my hallucination tells me to open an airlock or to self-destruct the starship? To which T'Pol says, it won't, because Captain Archer trusts you.
Yes.
Which seems like a lackluster argument, but it wins the day. And he says, well, you know, it's only a couple more hours anyway, so we should be good. And they go up to the bridge to see where they are. They think that they should have been leaving this disturbance. And they find out that it has expanded rapidly and that at their current rate, it will take them 10 weeks to get out.
This was my favorite scene in the episode because I'm in software development.
Mm-hmm.
And you think, okay, hey, we're all done. No, we still have 10 weeks of work left. That was really familiar.
It's true, and they are very upset about this. And so they decide, well, Tuck told us not to, Commander Tucker, also known as Tuck, told us not to use the warp drive, but if we just are an impulse, it'll take us at least 10 weeks, because I assume they don't know how fast this thing is expanding, so it could take more than 10 weeks. So we have to risk it and turn on the warp engines and get the heck out of here. And the Doctor is like, well, at least you're here. You're the science officer, T'Pol. Everything should be fine. You know how to do all this stuff. Let's go to engineering. So they go to engineering, and T'Pol doesn't know how to do anything, apparently. She's forgotten.
She's in very Bruce Willis in Sixth Sense mode.
It's true. She is the expanse.
Touches nothing. Nobody talks to her.
Yes, she is. She cannot remember how to do anything. She basically tells him to read the manual in a kind of a funny scene.
I'm a physician, not an engineer.
Exactly. And so Phlox has to figure out, he reads the manual, basically, brings the engine back online.
That was a TOS callback, right?
It was,
I'm a physician,
fact,
not an engineer?
Yes.
I got it.
Ah, good. Good job, Greg. They bring it online. They're very excited. Then it stops working. And he's like, well, do you think it's the, what is it, particle containment fields or something? And T'Pol's like, probably. And he's like, okay, well, let's fix them. All you have to do is press that lever right next to you, T'Pol. And she's like, okay. And then he runs off to do something. He comes back. She hasn't pressed the lever. And she gives a very confused look. And he's like, oh, I have to do everything. He presses the lever.
Well, you're corporeal.
Yes, exactly. It becomes very clear at this point what is going on to everybody, I would hope, who's watching the episode. He then hallucinates Commander Tucker basically saying, you're going to screw it all up and kill us all. But, spoiler alert, he does not. They warp out.
There was actually the worst shot of somebody using controls. He's just whacking his hand at a keypad when he's entering the particle containment hootie-hoo. They didn't even have him distinctly press buttons.
Well, that's how it works. You just slap your hand on it, and stuff happens. That's why
That was the take they used!
Exactly. And in the beginning, Commander Tucker says, you know, normally I wouldn't even let you on here until you've had 4 years of training. But he gets like a half an hour crash course, and then he reads the manual, and he is then able to bring warp cores back online and pilot
horizontal warp cores. That's different.
It's true. They didn't understand that the vertical was better or something.
They did. The rooms weren't as tall then.
Exactly. They didn't have the structural integrity. So he becomes a very competent engineer in like an hour crash course and reading like warp core for dummies or something. But he saves the day. They get out of the expanse thing.
The climax of the danger is. He's counting up to two.
It is
two.
True.
We've reached two. Hooray!
And then the hull pressure increases, but he quickly fixes that by pressing a button, and it's all fine. Yeah, there was not really a great sense of danger throughout this episode. Although something did spark while they were going up to two, so there was that someone might have got a singed eyebrow.
The fireworks crews that crews have hidden around in the engineering section went off.
That's right.
Without damaging anything.
It's true. So they warp out, they show the Enterprise warping, and then they cut to Phlox waking up Archer and Porthos licking Archer again very happily.
I noticed that suppressing their neocortex apparently stops body hair growth as well.
It's true.
Because nobody had a beard after 4 days of sleep.
What's the future? They in Starfleet...
NASA developed this technology for Sandra Bullock in Gravity.
Well, see, there you go. So
she's been in space for 2 weeks and...
It is an application. This is hundreds of years after that, so,
yeah, so.
It's even more advanced. They have like a stasis field that you can put on your face, and it won't grow any hair, and it saves you a lot of trouble. So you can spend less time in your beautiful bathroom. And then so T'Pol, Phlox is like, well, T'Pol, you must be very tired, because I'm certainly tired, so let me walk you to your quarters, and then we can go to sleep separately. It doesn't suddenly turn into like a romance.
Which slash a- fiction.
That's true. Send me a link to your slash fiction.
Oh, jeez. You're going to regret asking for that.
Probably. He goes to Paul's quarters, and shockingly,
dun dun dun,
she has been in a coma the entire time. He has hallucinated to Paul, which explains so many things.
The color of her jumpsuit. Weren't you people paying attention?
And her lipstick. It all matches. It did. I thought they did a pretty good. I mean, it wasn't shocking because this is basically the Sixth Sense shtick, right? But, spoiler alert for that movie.
Rosebud was a sled.
No. But I thought they handled it pretty well. She doesn't. I was suspicious right from the start, though, because they had put. They said very clearly that Phlox is the only person that was not going to be in a coma. And then all of a sudden, T'Pol was there. So you think something's up. But overall, I think that was handleable. And I thought it would have probably been better had they ended there.
Right.
But they don't.
Because it ends on quizzical reaction shot.
It does.
Wah, wah, wah.
That's right. Where they end with T'Pol and Phlox. Phlox goes to the mess hall, which is buzzing with activity. He's clearly much more at ease. He joins T'Pol for dinner or something. I don't know. She's eating something. He asks if he can eat his bowl of leeches with her, and she says yes. And she says, well, Doctor, I'm surprised that you must have been lonely for those 4 days. And he says something along the lines of, not as lonely as one might think. And then it ends. Which I think was they must have needed to pad it the episode. Yeah.
Because well, it was they could have just had him running away from the bug for another 4 seconds.
That's true. I don't know why they added that scene. It wasn't really needed, but they did, and then it ends. And that is Doctor's Orders, Enterprise episode.
A thoroughly unoffensive episode of Star Trek.
Yes, it was. I did not hate it. I did not love it, but. I watched it twice in a row, so how bad could it be? I mean, I watched it twice in a row because of this podcast. I wouldn't have watched it again had I watched it if I was just watching it on my own. But, as a standalone, one-shot episode, it does the job.
It certainly seemed fine to me.
Now, here's the question, though, Greg. As this is your second Enterprise episode, does this make you want to seek out and explore more episodes of Enterprise?
Unfortunately, I know too much about Enterprise's reputation to actually want to seek it. You know what I will do? I will go read the Wikipedia entry for Enterprise.
Ah, well, see, that's a start.
Curious about the Ark. I'm curious about its place in Star Trek history. I'm curious about, just what the good bits of it were. Mm-hmm. And, for instance, if somebody were to say, here are the 6 episodes of Enterprise that you must see, I would watch those.
Well, there you go. So, that's something.
But am I going to start from episode 1 again? No, I am not.
No. This episode, I think that this is in the, I mentioned, this is in the kind of the subgenre of, I like it when secondary characters get the focus in Star Trek series. So, it has that going for it, because Phlox doesn't really do a lot in most of the episodes other than, be an alien and solve some medical problem. And it had an interesting, it's not a super unique idea, but it was well done, I thought, overall.
It's like the obligatory 1 or 2, George songs on every Beatles album.
Exactly. They're not offensive, but they're probably not the ones you're going to have on repeat. So, with that high praise, I think we will end yet another episode of Random Trek. Unless you have some closing thoughts about Doctor's Orders, Greg.
Nanu, nanu.
Well, Greg Noss, thank you for joining me on
Thank
Random
you very
Trek.
Much.
And I still don't have a sign-off, so that's it.